is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If we are to end the pandemic in the coming year, we must end inequity by ensuring 70% of the population of every country is vaccinated by the middle of next year.
That's World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus on the unequal distribution of life-saving COVID-19 vaccine between rich and poor countries. Details coming up. Also, France's military says it has killed one of the leaders of the so-called Islamic State in the Greater Sahara Group. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The World Health Organization warns the COVID-19 pandemic will not end until the unequal distribution of life-saving vaccines between rich and poor countries ends. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
In an assessment of the year gone by, WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the world is still in the grips of a pandemic that shows no sign of going away. He notes more than 3.3 million people have lost their lives to COVID-19 in 2021. That, he says, is more deaths than from HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis combined. He says the odds of this turning around anytime soon are not good. He says there is consistent evidence the new Omicron variant of the coronavirus is spreading significantly faster than the Delta variant. He says it is likely that people who are vaccinated or have recovered from COVID-19 could be infected or reinfected.
None of us want to be here again in 12 months' time, talking about missed opportunities, continued inequity, or new variants. If we are to end the pandemic in the coming year, we must end inequity by ensuring 70% of the population of every country is vaccinated by the middle of next year.
Statistics show at least half of the world's population has received a COVID-19 shot, and the other half has not. People in rich countries have received about 50 times as many vaccine doses as those in the poorer countries. For example, WHO reports just over 10% of people in Africa have received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, compared with 64% in North America and 62% in Europe. Studies show booster shots are effective against the Omicron variant of the virus that causes COVID-19. WHO, however, says boosters should be given to the elderly and people who are immunocompromised and not to those at low risk, such as children. A senior advisor to the Director General, Bruce Aylward, refutes accusations that WHO is against boosters.
What WHO has said very clearly is that we want to make sure that every dose of vaccine used has the best possible impact to get us out of this pandemic. And what we're seeking is equity in the use of vaccines globally. The biggest bang for your buck is vaccinating someone at risk who has not received a dose of the vaccine.
Aylward notes most people who are hospitalized are unvaccinated. He says the goal right now is to make sure everyone gets the first dose before people at low risk get their booster shots. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Scientists and health advocates in Africa say they are deeply disappointed by a statement from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention about the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. The CDC last week recommended the Moderna and Pfizer jabs ahead of the J&J because of concerns the J&J shot could cause rare blood clots or thrombosis. The J&J vaccine is one of the most widely used in Africa because it's a single-dose shot that doesn't require ultra-cold storage. Darren Taylor has more.
Health communities in Africa are concerned that the CDC's linking of the J&J vaccine with rare but potentially fatal side effects will spark widespread rejection of the jab. The president of the Southern African Society of Thrombosis, Professor Barry Jacobson, says it's already started.
I've been inundated with calls of people saying, you know, you see, you're poisoning us. we don't want to take this, and we're getting the secondhand vaccines, and we shouldn't be getting the J&J, should only be getting the Pfizer.
South Africa's top epidemiologist, Professor Salim Abdul Karim, maintains J&J's a safe jab.
If you had to just look at, for example, thrombosis from cases of COVID-19, it's far higher than what we see from the vaccine. So there's no question the vaccine has a net benefit, even in the face of these side effects. So the anti-vax movement is just wrong.
The CDC recommendation followed the occurrence of a rare and sometimes fatal blood clotting issue called thrombosis with thrombocytopenia syndrome, or TTS, that specifically affected the brain in people who got the J&J vaccine.
The fact that CDC came out and said that, it shows no insight into the fact what we face in Africa. Where in Africa, there's a problem with cold chain storage and the fact that the patients can't get to more than one vaccine. So far,
Jacobson says he doesn't understand why the CDC singled out the J&J jab.
We have seen thrombosis occurring with all the vaccines. But the fact of the matter is, if one gets COVID, the risk of thrombosis is massive. It's a much greater risk of dying of a thrombosis from getting COVID and then subsequently getting a thrombosis and dying than from being vaccinated and getting a thrombosis, where the risk is minuscule compared to the other group.
Jacobson was on the safety committee that oversaw one of the world's biggest vaccine trials when 500,000 health workers in South Africa received the J&J vaccine earlier this year. That trial, called Sisonke, came to a temporary halt in April when the CDC paused use of the vaccine after 6 cases of TTS in the US. After analyzing more data, the CDC gave the green light to the jab, saying its benefits outweighed its risks. Why the CDC would now, out of the blue, again link the J&J vaccine with this type of thrombosis, Jacobson says, is beyond him.
If you look at the true incidence, it's in 1 in 500,000 to 1 in 1,000,000. So you have a higher chance of being struck by lightning. We have looked at the cases after the first round of Sisonke, and we had 2 cases of TTS, both of whom I actually was involved with, and both of whom have survived and were successfully managed.
Jacobson calls the CDC statement very irresponsible. He says it should have considered the consequences for countries where people don't have the luxury of preferring certain vaccines over others.
The fact that people are being vaccinated and it is protecting them is of major importance. And anything that can give the anti-vaxxers ammunition is really not acceptable. CDC, by putting out the statement, has made people scared about taking the J&J booster, and they shouldn't be.
The South African Health Department has reassured people that the J&J vaccine is safe. But Jacobson fears the CDC recommendation has done irreparable harm. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Kenya has reached an all-time high COVID-19 infection rate with positive results at nearly a third of tests. Scientists believe the surge is fueled by the highly transmissible Omicron variant of the coronavirus. But Kenya is also seeing a low rate of hospitalizations and deaths, as Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenya is battling a wave of COVID-19 infections greater than any since the coronavirus pandemic began in 2020. The positive test rate jumped from 6.5% to almost 30% in the past week. The World Health Organization labels a country high risk if its positivity rate is more than 5% and advises affected countries to consider restrictions to limit the spread of the virus. However, the head of research group Amref Health Africa International, Githinji Gitahi, says that many people visiting hospitals seeking coronavirus treatment do not need to be admitted.
We have a lot of outpatient visits in the clinics, in the hospitals, but largely outpatient. Outpatient numbers have almost doubled, but not hospitalization. So we are not seeing a matching hospitalization, oxygen requirements, ICU, HDU, as would have been expected, which indicates that maybe it's either earlier immunity in the host or in the body of those who are getting infected, vaccination plus early infection, or just that the particular variant is mild and is not causing severe disease.
Some countries have reintroduced lockdowns to fight the spread of the Omicron variant, but the East African nation has been reluctant to do so. Dr. David Sang, an epidemiologist, says people have shown some laxity when following health protocols like wearing masks and frequently washing hands.
I may not attribute it to the new strain. I think it's more likely to be because people became complacent. Because for a long time, the level of transmission was very low. And they perceived that this was that the disease is declining and that their guard is not as important as before.
In Kenya, wearing a face mask is mandatory, but these days the mandate is rarely followed or enforced. Gitahi says the country will continue to have waves of COVID-19 until more of the population get vaccinated.
As usual, the wave will burn out, and we expect that normally we see the waves taking about 3-4 weeks and then they get onto the decline. This one is rising very rapidly, which also could mean that it could also decline rapidly, so maybe 2-3 weeks. So we expect that to happen, but people need to get vaccinated so that we don't end up with a surge in hospitalization in case we, you know, it is spread out to areas of low vaccination.
Out of the estimated 54 million people in Kenya, about 9 million have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and only 3.6 million are fully vaccinated. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Bus passengers and church members will need to present proof of COVID-19 vaccination to access those facilities as Rwanda's government tries to tamp down a surge in infections of the new Omicron variant. Such measures are rising around the world as Omicron spreads quickly. Eugene Umana has details from Rwanda's capital, Kigali.
Several church members were turned away yesterday because they didn't have proof that they were fully vaccinated against COVID-19. She says they normally measure our temperature and ask us to wear proper masks. But today, things have really changed. Without vaccination, you cannot enter the church. This new variant might be really dangerous. People who rely on public buses found similar restrictions. He says, I was going to work, but I'm not allowed to get on a bus. I heard the announcement, but I thought implementation couldn't be this quick. I've resisted vaccines, but now I think I don't have another choice. While the Omicron variant does not appear to be as deadly as previous strains, it is proving to be very contagious. Dr. John Kengasong, director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control, says the situation underscores the need to target current variants while anticipating others.
And we just don't know what other variant will emerge in future. We're dealing with this variant. I call for the continent and the world not to panic, but to, with a very level head, find ways we can fight this variant, but develop systems that will enable us to tackle the next variant.
Dr. Khaled Abdelghafar, the Minister of Higher Education and Scientific Research, has said African countries should pull together their efforts to mobilize resources because new variants are damaging continental economies and require money to combat.
And with the Omicron variant rising, we as a continent must continue to effectively mobilize resources as quickly as possible to implement the African Union Joint COVID-19 Continental Strategy to combat the pandemic and fortify the continental partnership for vaccine manufacturing.
Wamkele Mene, the Secretary General of African Continental Free Trade Area, sees a silver lining. The scarcity of medical supplies on the continent should be a business opportunity for African investors.
The COVID-19 pandemic has intensified the need for African countries to enhance capacity to produce pharmaceuticals and vaccines, as well as accelerate the establishment of the generic drug industry. This provides an opportunity for African investors to invest in the pharmaceutical sector, as well as for technology supporting these investments in Africa.
The African Union Commission worries that COVID-19 variants are paralyzing already fragile African public health. Commissioner Vice Chairperson Dr. Monique Nsanzabaganwa explains.
Africa needs a more holistic public health approach to safeguard the health and economic security of our continent as it strives to meet the aspirations of the Agenda 2063 for Africa.
Agenda 2063 is Africa's blueprint for transforming Africa into a global powerhouse. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
France's military says it has killed one of the leaders of the so-called Islamic State in the Greater Sahara Group. Somara Bora was one of the suspects in last year's slaying of six young French aid workers along with their guide and driver. Bora was killed by a French drone strike Monday as he was riding his motorcycle. Colonel Pascal Lanny, spokesman for the French army, told the French news agency AFP that Bora has filmed the execution of the eight victims in August and overseen publication of the footage. 11 other people implicated in the murders were also arrested in Niger in recent months. Lately, France has begun to recognize and wind down its Barakana force in the Sahel. French troops, who currently number 5,000 in the region, are to be drawn down to about half by 2023. Cameroonian authorities say troops have arrested hundreds of armed men blamed for communal violence in the northeast this month that displaced more than 100,000 people, most to neighboring Chad. Authorities say they also seized hundreds of weapons as well as cattle stolen during the conflict over scarce resources. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Cameroonian authorities say the military is conducting an intensive search to find and arrest additional armed men operating in Logon and Shari along the northern border with Chad. The governor of the far north region, Mijiyawa Bakari, says military raids on hideouts in the area led to the arrest of several hundred men. Speaking from the region's capital, Maroua, Bakari said the men were believed responsible for much of the violence this month that displaced more than 100,000 people, most of them across the border to Chad. He says besides the arrest, the military also seized several hundred weapons that the men were using to attack and kill civilians. Bakari says troops also seized 30 motorcycles that armed men from rival communities were using in attacks. He says more than 200 cattle stolen from ranchers have been recovered and will be handed over after investigations to determine their legitimate owners. Clashes broke out on December 4 between ranchers and fishers over water resources, leaving scores dead and sending tens of thousands fleeing, most of them women and children. Arab Shua cattle ranchers and ethnic Musgum fishers accuse each other of trespassing and occupying each other's land. Bakari says most males who remained in the villages are involved in the fighting. He would not give details on how many people have been killed in the clashes, but said no government troops are among the casualties. President Paul Biya last week dispatched to the area a delegation of lawmakers, ministers, religious leaders, and traditional rulers to negotiate a peace between the communities. Retired Army Colonel Hamad Kalkaba Malbum was part of the delegation. He says in areas where the clashes have stopped, they are asking villagers to return home.
The President of the Republic of Cameroon sent a mission to tell people that they must calm. The government will give some instruction to rebuild what has been destroyed, and we need also to prepare the development of that region, which has already suffered Boko Haram.
Boko Haram, an Islamist militant group from Nigeria, has since 2014 spread to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, and Niger, launching attacks that have killed more than 30,000 people and displaced 2 million. Cameroon's government is allocating $300 million to rebuild infrastructure the militants destroyed along the border. The communal violence this month left several villages and markets burned to the ground. Cameroonian authorities have asked people in the area who own weapons to hand them over. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees reports at least 85,000 Cameroonians have fled into neighboring Chad and 15,000 are internally displaced. But it says the real number could be much higher. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
A judge today ruled that former South African President Jacob Zuma can appeal a court judgment that would have ended his medical parole and return him to jail. Zuma was released on medical parole in September, cutting short his 15-month imprisonment for defying a constitutional court order compelling him to appear before a commission investigating massive corruption during his time in office. Last week, Judge Elias Matojane ruled that the decision to grant Zuma parole was illegal and ordered his return to jail. Tusoko Malo reports from Johannesburg.
Zuma, passionately described by many as a man with many lives, has been given another opportunity to stay out of prison. His lawyer, Dali Mpofu, tore into Judge Matojane's decision, saying he failed to properly interpret the statutes. Mpofu criticized the ruling for concurring with those who said it was illegal for Commissioner of Correctional Services to grant Zuma parole.
If there is a specific section that says the National Commissioner and specifically excludes all these other people, excludes the minister, excludes the parole board, excludes everyone, may grant parole for prisoners who are serving a sentence of less than 24 months, then that must be given effect to. Otherwise, those words are meaningless. It means that section is just there for decoration.
The correctional services, which granted Zuma medical parole, also sought leave to appeal the judgment. On its behalf, attorney Maribola Simon Mpahlele submitted that the court erred by replacing the National Commissioner's decision to grant parole with that of not granting parole.
The decision to substitute the decision of the National Commissioner with its own decision, we submitted this the misdirection, my lord.
Matojane concurred and said Zuma can take his appeal to the Supreme Court.
Another court may find that the order that the third respondent's time spent on medical parole should not count impacts on him unfairly in that one, it was not his decision, but that of the commissioner to be released on medical parole. Second, his freedom of movement is restricted, and this has an impact on his dignity.
Those opposing Zuma's appeal efforts argued that he was not terminally ill, as has been suggested. Legal experts say the matter could go all the way to the Constitutional Court, since it involves proper interpretation of the law. If it does, it is possible that Zuma could be a free man by then or a candidate for general parole. Tusoko Malo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
A second death as well as rapes are being reported from Sudan's mass protest on Sunday. The UN Human Rights Office, according to Reuters, today said it received 13 allegations of rape and gang rape by security forces during the protest. UN Human Rights Office spokeswoman Lise Throssell called for a prompt, independent and thorough investigation into allegations of rape and sexual harassment, along with allegations of deaths and injuries from disproportionate use of force, in particular live ammunition. Sunday's demonstration drew hundreds of thousands of people to the capital Khartoum to protest against the October 25th military coup and a November 21st agreement that reinstated Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.